You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later, we'll talk to a legal scholar who says the United States Supreme Court may serve the American people better by only having 8 justices on the bench. We'll find out why.
First, the Wisconsin Historical Society has received a grant from the Department of the Interior to research sites in Milwaukee that have been significant to the African-American community.
The state's Historic Preservation Office plans to nominate 4 properties to be included in the National Register of Historic Places. It's part of a nationwide effort to share the stories of groups that have been underrepresented in American history.
We're joined in the studio now by Jim Drager. He's the State Historic Preservation Officer for the Wisconsin Historical Society. And he's also the co-author of books about Wisconsin's historic taverns and gas stations. Jim, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Well, the grant that the State Historical Society has gotten is part of a nationwide project from the Department of the Interior to find places that tell the story of underrepresented communities. How is this effort going to accomplish that?
Okay. Well, first of all, the National Register of Historic Places is an attempt to recognize properties that tell the broad stories of the country, the kind of sweeping stories that help define who Americans are and, by extension, who people in Wisconsin are. And frankly, over the years, it's done a pretty lousy job of telling the stories of people who are more often disenfranchised. You know, it started out telling the story of rich white men. And as years have gone on, we've understood that history is much more rich than that and much more deep than that. And so it's part of an effort to recognize that.
So here in Wisconsin, how is the money going to be used?
Well, we're going to focus in Milwaukee on the African-American community. Milwaukee's always had the largest number of African-Americans in the state. In the 1930s, about 70% of African-Americans lived in Milwaukee. So we thought that was a good place to start. And so we have been doing some pre-research for a few months before we applied for the grant, trying to determine what prospective properties might be out there.
And what'd you find?
Well, we found, as you might imagine, there are properties that are associated with the institutional life of the city, African-American fraternal halls, organizations like the NAACP and the NAACP's Youth Council, properties associated with people who are significant movers and shakers in the African-American community, and properties that just sort of reflect the social life of African-Americans.
And I read about one that's under consideration, a home that was also known by the alternate name of the Casablanca Hotel.
Sure.
So yeah. Interesting. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's a fascinating story. In the days of segregation, African Americans, when they traveled, were often discriminated against in terms of restaurants and lodging spaces. And they even published separate guides called Green Guides for traveling African-Americans, so they knew where it was safe to go and where it was safe to eat. One of those places was a home in Milwaukee that was used sort of as a boarding home. And when famous African-American musicians came to Milwaukee to perform, people like Cab Calloway and Louis Armstrong, they stayed in these people's home.
And the home, there's a picture of it in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The home is beautiful.
Yeah.
And I looked at the home and I thought, this is going to be the home of a wealthy couple. And it sounds like they were maybe more working class. Not much known about this couple. What do we know?
Well, we don't know all that much about them yet. You know, that's the purpose of the grant, is to allow us to dig deeper. But that's right. They were just working class people and happened to live in a big home, and they made money by renting, portions of the home out as a sort of a lodging house.
So how do you find the stories behind it? Once you've identified these places of interest, how do you go digging when there may not be that much of record?
Well, that's a real challenge when you look at some of these groups, because they're not well represented in written histories. And you have to go to primary sources. Milwaukee had black newspapers, so we'll be combing through the newspapers to see what they said about them. We'll be looking at city directories. We'll be talking to people in the community and doing oral histories with people. One of the really interesting things about getting this grant is the grandson of that family called me on the phone shortly after it hit the Milwaukee newspapers and started telling me stories about the hotel.
Oh,
and
wow.
I said, give me your name and number and we'll be back to you as soon as we get the money.
A lot of stories there, I bet. Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's one of them. Another you're looking at is the first African-American-owned bank.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you know about that one?
Well, it was established in 1971, and it's very interesting. In the 1930s, in the entire United States, there were only something like a little over 25 African-American banks, and there were none in Milwaukee. And as the white flight happened in Milwaukee in the 70s and 80s, banking institutions moved out too. And, you know, today we talk about food deserts and in urban places in poorer neighborhoods. Well, there were banking deserts where there just weren't financial institutions that were there to serve the African-American community. So some business people got together and decided to open the first African-American bank and struggled quite a bit in the very beginning trying to get everything organized and to open the bank, but ultimately opened it in 1971.
These stories sound interesting. I mean, I'm thinking about especially the family connection of that home, the Casablanca Hotel. How do you identify some of these places that history has left by the wayside to begin with?
Well, usually there are some traces here and there, you know. So the newspapers occasionally talked about things like that. Sometimes there's the kind of oral history of the community. People know about places or about people. Some of it makes its way into the written historical record, you know, like the work of the NAACP in Milwaukee is pretty well documented. We have records from that organization that we can look to, that sort of thing. So it's just being a good historical detective and following the leads and trying to think of the most likely sources that you can find information in.
Jim Drager is with us right now from the Wisconsin Historical Society talking about plans to nominate 4 properties to be included in the National Register of Historic Places. And this is part of a national effort. This is not just Wisconsin. Why do you think it's important to tell these stories, to have this available and part of the acknowledged shared history of a community?
Well, I think you're right on the mark right there. It's a shared history. And all communities help to build Wisconsin culture. And that needs to be recognized. If we're talking about preserving the things that are meaningful, that tell us how we got to where we are and why things are the way they are, they need to include the stories of all people.
So what happens once you identify these places? You've got some contenders. You've told us about a couple of them. How do you narrow that down?
Well, we will look at we will examine all of those buildings. The National Register of Historic Places requires that properties retain what they call historic integrity, which means that they physically represent that period of time where they are important. So we'll be looking at them and trying to determine how original are they, what has changed, if what's changed has been important or not. We'll be looking at the stories and try to tease out how those stories meet the criteria for listing in the National Register and make that case of what the important contribution was to the broad patterns of history or why this person was a significant person in the history of Milwaukee. You know, that sort of analysis has to happen.
And that happens, and then 4 get chosen. What does it mean? How big a deal is this for one of these locations to be on this National Register?
Well, you know, it's mostly an honor. Properties that are listed on the National Register are recognized as being properties that are important in our history. But it also brings some potential financial benefits that can help to preserve these properties over time, and it probably more than anything else, it brings community recognition. You know, you sort of get that property on the map, a cultural map of what, how people see the city of Milwaukee and what its stories are.
So speaking of acknowledgement in the community, how does the community get to interact with these properties and find out more?
Well, in the process of the project, we'll be having some meetings in Milwaukee and sharing the results of our research and getting input from people. The National Register is a public, the nominations are public documents, and there anyone can view them. We put them up on our website. We write stories that promote those listings. So there will be a lot of different ways where people can interact with those properties.
So for you, how exciting is this opportunity to get to get to know the community better, to hear these stories that maybe no one but a few select people may know still?
Yeah, I think it's really exciting. That's a really great part of the job is rediscovering history in Wisconsin. It may have been forgotten or poorly remembered, and being able to really celebrate that these properties are part of what makes Wisconsin, Wisconsin.
And for the public, again, is there any chance that any of these would be open as a historic site where you could go in and tour, say, the Casablanca Hotel?
I think that's going to be a matter of the owners. You know, one of the balances that you make when you recognize these properties is making sure that people understand that many of these properties are private properties and they're not publicly open for tours, and that you need to respect the rights of the people who own them. But that doesn't mean that they may not be so excited about the histories that they decide on their own that they want to open them up.
Are there any that we should know more about already that we could visit African-American landmarks in the city of Milwaukee, or maybe others of other communities that you think maybe haven't gotten the attention they deserve, but are neat landmarks to go visit?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there are lots of groups that whose properties have not been recognized. One of the real challenges when you're dealing with trying to recognize the history of people who have been the subject of persecution and segregation is that many of those properties get torn down. You know, some of the most important African-American properties in Milwaukee were torn down during the urban renewal process. You know, as preservationists, we call it urban removal because that's what it did really well. And the African-American communities in Milwaukee, they just demolished scores of properties. But it's an effort that we're going to continue. When the grant ends, we are going to continue to be working on recognizing properties like that. So I just say stay tuned and keep watching, and we'll be turning up more.
Jim, thank you so much for joining us. I'm looking forward to hearing more about your research.
Thank you.
That was Jim Draeger, the State Historic Preservation Officer for the Wisconsin Historical Society.
Coming up after the news, we'll hear the case for a permanent 8-justice bench for the U.S. Supreme Court. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.